You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, this is Chris from That One Time on Tour. Odds are, if you're listening to this, you're in a band or know someone who is. One of the biggest problems facing bands is finding affordable, high-quality merchandise. Well, not anymore. The Merch Planet offers soft, high-end quality shirts starting as low as $6 a piece. And right now, they are offering 15% off your first order to all TOTOT listeners. They have lightning-fast turnarounds and ship everywhere throughout the U.S. and Canada. Head on over to themerchplanet.com and use the promo code TOTOT15 at checkout. You'll be glad you did. Episode number 66 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Daggermouth. Pop-punk band Daggermouth are back and ready to reclaim what's theirs. Forming in 2004, they released two albums, Stallone and Turf Wars, which alongside their catchy songwriting melodies and energetic live performances, garnered the group a loyal fan base. After touring with the likes of 4 Year Strong and I Am the Avalanche, the band broke up in early 2009. Now, 10 years later, Daggermouth have reformed and are stronger than ever. For more information on Daggermouth, check out daggermouth.bandcamp.com, facebook.com/daggermouthca, and Instagram at daggermouth604. Now here it is, their new single, Ramen Noodle Doodle.
Heathen and Heretic Apparel. Our clothing is inspired by the cultures we grew up in. Metal, punk, a little bit of goth, and all things dark. We offer men's, women's, and unisex t-shirts, tank tops, hats, and accessories. And right now, Heathen and Heretic is offering 20% off our entire store to all podcast listeners. Just use the promo code TOUR20 at checkout. That's TOUR20. Visit our online store at heathenandheretic.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Heathen and Heretic Apparel. Check us out.
Everybody's aging faster than me. We end up in the same place.
This is Ray from Bracket, and you are listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the gold, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow, we'll do it all again.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, what is going on? This is Chris Swinney. As always, I am your host for That One Time on Tour. This is my podcast where I get to sit down and chat with somebody in or around the entertainment industry. Last week's episode was killer with Seb from the amazing band Baroness. Thank you guys for checking that out. We did really well. We charted all over the place, all kinds of different countries. So I'm glad that you guys enjoyed that. Seb was such a great guy. And if you haven't listened to that, after this episode, go back and check out episode number 65. But today is episode number 66. I got to have a chat with the drummer from one of my favorite bands growing up, a Fat Records band called Bracket. I got to sit down and talk to Mr. Ray Castro from Bracket. I love Bracket. I remember checking them out on some of those early Fat comps, and I remember seeing one of their music videos on one of the Cinema Beer Goggles series videos that Hopeless Records put out. And man, they're a great band. They choose really weird melodies, and they do amazing harmonies. You can kind of hear like equal parts from like Beach Boys and Ramones, and then some punk rock stuff, and it's just. Bracket is an amazing band. They do whatever they want to do, and that's why I love them. They kind of didn't really fit with all the punk rock, like Fat bands back in the day, but that kind of made them stand out. So they have a new record out on Fat right now called Too Old to Die Young. We dig into that pretty deep, and we talk about the history of the band and all kinds of good stuff. So before we get to my conversation with Mr. Ray Castro from Bracket, we're going to pay some bills. We're going to talk about some of my sponsors. We have a lot of sponsors on this episode. You guys heard at the beginning, we had the Merch Planet, really cool company. They offer really, really affordable merch for bands. Check out themerchplanet.com and you can use the promo code TOTOT15 to get 15% off your first order. So check them out. Also, Dagger Mouth, amazing band at the beginning of the episode. Really excited to have those guys on board. And I remember hearing their name a lot back in the day, and I never really checked them out. But I'm sad that I didn't check them out. But now I'm happy because they are on the show, and I really like them. So go check out Dagger Mouth. You can go to daggermouth.bandcamp.com, or you can check them out on all the socials. Back once again, Heathen and Heretic. I love their clothes, man. It's funny. My wife wasn't super sure what a heretic was. And I told her, I said, it's like a crazy person. And I like looked at the definition, and it's like a religious zealot or someone that's against religion and they're crazy. I can't remember the exact definition, but she was wearing her heretic shirt that they sent us to the grocery store or the gas station the other day. And I guess some people were giving her some crazy looks. So, but I do want to thank Heathen and Heretic for hooking us up and for being a sponsor and for helping us keep the lights on. So go to heathenandheretic.com. They have some amazing clothes. You guys are going to love it. So support them, and they'll keep supporting us. Also want to say what's up to Merge 4. You guys have heard me talk about it many times. They make socks. They have socks where they collaborate with artists, with skateboarders, with musicians. It's an awesome company. Go to merge4.com or more at merge4 on all the social media platforms. And we're going to be doing the contest. I've talked about it on the last couple episodes for our patrons, the patron only contest for some merge4 swag. And a couple of the other sponsors have thrown some stuff in as well. So if you want to be eligible to participate in the contest and get some cool swag for merge4 or some of our other sponsors, you need to head on over to patreon.com/TOTOT podcast and get involved at the $5 level, and you will be eligible. And I've been putting up some new stuff over there. I have some bonus episodes I'm going to be putting up soon. And It's just, I'm going to start really, really taking care of the patrons because you guys are helping me out a lot. So head on over there and check that out and get involved if you would like to. I got to give a shout out to Permanence Tattoo Gallery over in Anderson, Indiana. My buddy Jacob Harrison, owner and head tattoo dude over there. He's been on the show before and it's the best place in the state of Indiana to get tattooed. So head on over to Facebook or Instagram or wherever at Permanence Tattoo Gallery and check them out. Downtown Anderson, Indiana. It's a great place. And that is it for the sponsors. Always tell them that Chris sent you. If there's a promo code, make sure you use it so you get your percentage off of your final order. But I just really want to give a shout out to my sponsors because they really help us keep this thing going. There are costs that are incurred with this podcast. And, you know, I didn't start the podcast to get rich. If I did, I would be stupid. But making some money along the way to help pay for some of the costs and keep my equipment up, it's really nice. And I feel very thankful that I have some great companies and great bands that are helping me out. So thank you guys very much. And, you know, things are going pretty well here in Indiana. It is starting to get a little cooler outside. It's weird. We'll have like a day where it's almost 100 degrees. Then we'll have a day where it's 70 degrees. So I'm ready for fall. I'm wearing a hoodie right now in my studio because it's a little bit chilly in here. But I'm ready to wear one outside. I'm ready to have some fires and not sweat while I'm outside. So, yeah, that's what's going on here. Just teaching a lot of guitar. I have a camp coming up for my kids, a music camp. Rock and Roll Summer Camp Autumn Session is starting in November, and it's a lot of fun. That's my passion right now is working with kids, putting bands together, and trying to influence the next generation of musicians. So we don't have a top five list today. I'm going to try to keep this intro kind of short. It's probably going to be a little bit long. I do have a segment of TOTOT Radio, so cue the theme music. Here we go. Radio, radio, radio.
Radio, radio, radio. When I've got the music, I've got the place to go. Radio, radio, radio. Radio, radio, radio. When I've got the music in me, I got a place to go.
On this edition of TOTOT Radio, it is pretty self-serving for me. I've had a lot of you guys out there email and ask about different bands that I've been in the past. You know, I had a tour of duty with the Ataris. I was in a band called The Widow Jenkins with Joel Green from the band Emery. I played in a band called Underminded with Nick, who is now in Sleeping with Sirens. I played in Brazil. We've had the Brazil guys on the show before. But my first band that I started, that band was called Chronic Chaos. We were based out of Upland, Indiana, which is a little tiny town. And we actually did quite a lot. Like I said, we released two full-length records and an EP. We were on various national and international compilations. We played the Warped Tour. We opened for like Rise Against and Agnostic Front and played with all kinds of crazy bands. Like that band existed for about 10 years. We started in high school. I don't know. It's kind of, you know, you forget about your first band and everybody's asking me and then I tell people and they're like, oh, I want to hear it. I want to hear it. So I was bored the other day and I re-released everything and it is slowly but surely showing up on all of the platforms where you can stream music. It's on Spotify and Google Play and Deezer and it'll be on iTunes and Apple Music soon. But I'm going to play a Chronic Chaos song just to see if you guys like it. I'd like some feedback. I was super young. Our last record that we released was in 2002. So it's, you know, 17 years ago. So I'm going to play the lead-off track on Wait to Watch Me Burn was the name of the last album that we put out. And the song is called Set in Stone. So I would like to get some feedback. So hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com or any of the socials. Let me know what you think of the song. And all the Chronic Chaos stuff is now on Spotify. So search Chronic Chaos and check it out. And yeah, this is what I did 17 years ago. So hope you guys enjoy it. Here it is, Set in Stone by Chronic Chaos. So yeah, that was Chronic Chaos, my first band. I started that band in 1993. I am an old dude. But that song came out on our album Wait to Watch Me Burn, which was released in 2002. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Like I said, we are on the streaming sites, so just search for Chronic Chaos and check out the other stuff. I think you guys might enjoy it. So if you want to become a sponsor, your band or company, just hit me up. TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on all of the platforms at TOTOTpodcast. All of those links plus other really cool links are over at TOTOTpodcast.com. And that's it for me. This intro is over. I'm sure you guys are stoked about that, because we're going to get into my conversation with Ray Castro from Bracket. I love Bracket so much. You guys are going to love Bracket if you don't already. And Ray was such a great guy, and we had an amazing conversation. So without further ado, we're going to get into my conversation with Mr. Ray Castro from the amazing band Bracket. Here we go. And I'm on the line with Mr. Ray Castro from the amazing band Bracket. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I've been listening to you guys for a long time. The first time I was exposed to your band was on the Fat Music for Fat People comp.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to talk about, back in the day, those comps meant so much to so many people. Did you find that through those compilations that your band actually gained a lot of fans?
Yeah, we really did. And we had a couple of songs that were on those, you know, the couple versions of those fat comps that, when we were tour and play live, and we got a good response always for those songs in particular. So we know that those comps reached a lot of people.
Did you guys get I was in the Ataris, and the Ataris are on a couple of those comps, and I was never really sure how things went. I know, did it have to be a song that was unreleased normally?
Yeah. I think that's true. I've never really thought about it, but I think that's true. And both of the songs, I think the songs that we had on there maybe eventually did come out on either 7-inch or a CD with Fat.
Okay. So you guys formed the band back in 1992. I know originally you were working with Caroline Records. Can you take me through the process of how it was signing with them? Because at the time they were a fairly large label. They were working with a lot of bigger, really big bands. So you guys got the band together. How did you come to sign with Caroline?
Yeah. So I don't know how much you know about the history, but where we grew up and when we formed the band, this was up in Sonoma County, you know, a small town called Forestville, where we all went to high school. And there's really no scene there at all.
What's the closest big city that you guys would go to?
Generally we played a lot in San Francisco and Marin County.
Okay.
We played some shows in Sonoma County, which is kind of where Forestville was, but they're really, for even outside of Forestville and other cities in the county, we're still pretty small. So we go down to the Bay Area, and that's where we did most of our, local shows were down there. The only reason I say that is because we really didn't have a whole lot of context for what bands would do. I mean, we were kind of just doing things on our own and discovering things. And prior to the Caroline deal, we were just playing as much as we could, and we were practicing a lot. And we decided we were just going to go and record some songs. And so we did an EP that we were just selling at shows and basically giving to anyone who would take it, and trying to get a little bit of traction from that. And then as we were doing that and playing shows, we were writing more songs, and we basically had another album's worth of songs, and we weren't connected with any label at that point. So we figured, well, we've already recorded and released ourselves on this EP, let's just do an album. And so we did that, and that was the 924 Forestville Street album, and we were basically done or near done with it when we connected with Caroline, and they offered to release it and distribute it for us, and that's how we got connected with them initially.
Did they give you like a bonus to like take care of the what you paid for the recording, or they just decided to release it? You know how that happens sometimes, like a band. I just always remember, like, I'm not a huge fan of this band, but I know the story of the Killers. Like, their first album was actually just a demo that they did in Las Vegas, and then this Warner Brothers or whoever it was, they're like, "Oh, it sounds good. We'll just put it out." So they just paid them back for all that stuff.
Yeah. So, yes and no. I mean, they didn't give us a check for any of our expenses, but we also didn't have to recoup a bunch of recording costs because we paid for that out of pocket. So.
That's always good, right?
Yeah. So it was kind of, I mean, I guess it was, you know, we didn't, like I said, they didn't reimburse us or anything like that, but I guess we you know how it works. You know, we whittled down that recoup faster than we would have otherwise. So it was good. And we were pretty happy with how that, you know, how that album came together. I mean, I think obviously things have evolved since then, but we put a lot into it, and, you know, we paid for a fairly real studio up where we were. And that was, we were trying to make a record. And so we were just happy to get it out.
Were you guys playing with a lot of punk bands back then? Because the one thing, like, I've listened to you guys for a long time and you guys have that kind of punk edge, but I wouldn't honestly say you're a punk band just because of the influences you can hear in the music. I mean, I know it's talked about a lot on other interviews and whatnot, but like the kind of the Beach Boys thing and the harmonies and just how you guys layer stuff sounds to me a lot different than most of the bands you get lumped in with. So like back in the day when you were on Caroline, you were starting to, you know, go out and play more and become like, you know, a professional quote unquote band. Were you playing a lot of shows with other punk bands?
Not really. I mean, we didn't really start playing a lot of punk shows until we got more connected with Fat. Although we would try to find local shows. And you're right. We didn't really fit that well. I mean, we had some songs or maybe some edges that kind of felt that they were you know, kind of a fit for that scene, but really not. And I remember one show in particular, and I'm trying to remember where this was. This was down way South Bay, South San Francisco. And we drove all the way down there one night and we got to the show and it was like a legit punk rock show.
Yeah.
And we told the organizer, like, I don't know that you want us to do this show right now. I don't know that it's going to go over that well. But, so yeah, we always kind of had this, a little bit of a mismatch.
Yeah.
And even when we got connected with Fat and we were playing more with, you know, some of the other bands on the label and some Warped Tour stuff and things like that, we still kind of were in our own little bubble, I think, even within that scene.
So what kind of bands were you guys listening to back in the day when you started the band? Like, what were some of your major influences? Because, I mean, like I said, there is that, I think I almost associate you guys with punk just because of Fat and everything you just said, but you can hear so much more in the songwriting and in the production.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, I mean, we grew up in an area that really didn't have any kind of a scene like that. You know, our high school, you know, was kind of a mixed bag. So you could walk through the parking lot and you could hear Metallica blaring out of a car and you could hear Garth Brooks blaring out of the next car.
It sounds like my high school, man. I grew up in Indiana and they used to have, the funny thing was there was these guys at my high school that had the big trucks and they always had a rebel flag in the back. And I'm like, dude, you've never been south other than to go to Florida on spring break. Like, you're from
right,
Indiana.
Right. Yeah. So there really wasn't much beyond kind of those sort of mainstream scenes. So when we kind of grew up listening, frankly, to classic rock, and there was you know, Marty was a big AC/DC fan, as was our former guitar player, and we just listened to a lot of rock music.
Marty went through a phase where he was really getting into blues guitar, and he was a huge Johnny Winter fan. And we would always go, I mean, we would go to see these guys play whenever we could. And these weren't like, you know, dingy punk clubs. We'd go wherever Johnny Winter was playing. He might be playing at the, you know, the local theater or whatever, and we'd go and check out the show or whatever. So, and then as we were sort of in high school and playing, you know, we got together, we were playing songs, and we played a lot of, this was really before the band became Bracket, but we would play a lot of parties, and we would, cause we had this catalog of, I don't know, a couple hundred cover songs that we could just show up and play.
Yeah.
And we'd play, like I said, kind of like, you know, Tom Petty and Creedence and, just whatever. And I mean, great songs for a bunch of high school kids who are sitting around drinking. Right. And then people would have a good time. And we did all that. So that was kind of, before Bracket really formed. And then I guess I would say, you know, Marty moved away for a little bit and kind of opened up his thinking on things, or was just exposed, is probably a better way, exposed to different things. And when he came back, you know, with a bunch of Ramones stuff and the Muffs and NOFX, and we started kind of, that really did have an influence on the kinds of things that we were wanting to play at that point.
So you telling me about the influences, whatnot, now, like the cover that you guys did, that Tommy Two-Tone song, 8675309, it sounds so good. And normally when, like, you know, punk bands or fat bands attempt to cover something for a comp, it's hard, like, to believe it. You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels forced. And you guys playing that song, I mean, I like it better than the original. It's just, it's got so much energy and like so much, like the harmonies are so good. So with you telling me what you guys grew up listening to, that kind of makes more sense now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know how we settled on that song. It was just something we started messing around with. And then, you know, obviously it's a recognizable thing. We started playing it at shows and just kind of became something that we always did. So yeah. Well, thanks for saying that. I think I was happy. It's a fun song to play. I mean, we could have just, you know, played the song double time and called it a day, but I think we just, you know, we just did our own thing with it.
Yeah. Because that's the thing that I like most of the time, bands, like, you know, I come from a band that got fairly popular off of a cover song. We did that Boys of Summer by Don Henley, and we kept it fairly true to the original, just, you know, made it a little bit heavier and maybe changed the tempo a bit. But most bands do when they cover a song, it's like, we have to put our stamp on it. And you guys put your stamp on it, but you guys stayed fairly true to the original. I just really like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a catchy song to begin with, so don't mess it up, right?
If it's a hit once, it's going to be a hit again, right?
Right, right.
So you guys are on Caroline. You know, you had some records come out on Caroline. Were you touring a lot, like, around the United States, or was it mostly just, like, West Coast stuff?
No, we were touring quite a bit. We toured on the first record, and then after we did Four Wheel Vibe, we were touring really, I wouldn't say nonstop, because that's not a fair statement, but I mean, when we weren't recording or writing and preparing to record, we were touring after, you know, after that. So we're pretty busy. I mean, I guess that was, you know, the unfortunate thing about Caroline is that they changed their focus. So they basically got rid of all their rock acts, and we were part of that. But up to that, it was great up until the end, I guess. But up to that point, you know, they were pretty supportive, and their distribution was good, and they were able to keep us on the road. And we weren't living it up in big tour buses, but we had enough to keep doing what we thought was fun to do. So it was working while we were there.
Were you doing any tours, like, overseas or anywhere, or just in the States?
We did some stuff overseas. I'm going to say, maybe kind of fuzzy on the timeline. I don't remember if that happened. It might've happened. Yeah, I think we did. So probably on the Four Wheel Vibe album, we were Europe a couple times. We did some stuff in Canada. We went to Japan, but I think that might've been, I don't know if we were still connected with Caroline or if that might have just been in the fat years. I don't recall.
So Caroline changed, like, you know, their focus or whatever. That happens with a lot of labels. They go another direction. Mm-hmm. So you guys, did you get dropped like formerly from Caroline?
Yeah, pretty much. So the way that it went is that, as I mentioned, we already had that first record done. And so when we signed with Caroline, we pretty much just went out on the road and started promoting, and you know, they got the distributing that record, and we just kind of were doing that. And then we wrote the second record, recorded that, went and toured. And then when we were wrapping that up, we had a whole third record that was, it was written, and we went into the studio, and actually we finished it in the studio. And the record was done, and we hadn't finished the artwork. We were kind of packaging it for release. And that's when we got, you know, when Caroline basically let us know that, you know, all of their, and I forgot who else was on the label at that time, but all of their rock acts were basically cut at that point. So that's part of the reason why that particular record, even though we finished it and recorded it, it kind of came out in pieces. And I think just up until just recently, we didn't get the whole thing out. So we're happy to do that finally.
So how did the relationship come about with Fat? Because I take it, you know, you guys were off Caroline. You're pretty much free agents. Did you guys already have some sort of relationship with Fat Mike, or like, how did that come about?
Well, we did. We had, so we had connected, with a manager in San Francisco. Her name was Lisa Klein. She had a couple other local bands in the Bay Area, and we had connected with her, and she was, you know, getting us shows and getting us exposure and things like that. And when we signed with Caroline, we had wanted to release some things, some 7-inch singles and stuff. And that was just a format that Caroline wasn't doing.
Yeah.
And so, they basically said, well, you know, if you can find a partner to do it with, you know, have a ball, we won't stop you from doing that. So, we talked to Lisa, and she was trying to get, you know, we had some stuff that we had recorded, and she was talking to different people, and we talked about Fat, and we weren't sure that Fat was going to be interested at all. And she ended up talking to Fat Mike, and as it turns out, you know, he was I think he had already had some knowledge of us, and he was interested in talking. And so he was excited. He was excited about it. And so we did a couple of 7-inches with Fat. And then, when the Caroline change happened, we basically reached out to Fat Mike, and we said, hey, you know, we're off Caroline, and literally the next day we were on Fat. He's always been a big supporter of us. And so that's kind of how that works. So when the Caroline thing ended, we weren't necessarily out shopping things around. We just, you know, we talked to Fat Mike, and he was already excited and ready to do something more with us. So that's how that happened.
Well, I mean, I can tell that he's a big fan of you guys anyway, because like, they covered that song of yours on their Counting Sheep
EP.
Yeah, that's right. That's got to be kind of crazy. They don't do a lot of covers, you know, and they covered one of your songs.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty happy. I mean, us and Minor Threat, and there might not be too many others that they covered. So that was kind of surreal to hear that. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So, I know that you guys were on Fat through kind of the heyday, you know what I mean? Like the mid-90s,
yeah,
where everything was selling. They didn't even have to promote. And if you were on Fat, people tried the band, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, all those times touring and everything, did the band feel like, I always ask people this question, like, you know, when you're a professional musician, you're doing it for a living. Was there ever a time or a show or just an instance where you were like, man, I'm living my dream, I'm getting to do what I want to do? Or did it always just kind of feel like the other shoe was going to drop? You know what I mean? Because I've been in bands like that as well. Was there ever an instance where you just felt like you're doing the thing you're supposed to be doing, and it was amazing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, there were times when it, you know, things felt really good. And I mean, and you know how this is from touring and playing live, right? I mean, from one show to the next, you could be feeling great, and then you could feel like just flushing the whole thing on the next shows. But
When you're in a punk band too, like the different markets, like you could play Los Angeles and there'd be like 1,000 people. And then you play Milwaukee and there's 20 people there. I mean, you don't ever know.
And that's how it was for us. I mean, the States were really, we had played a lot of good shows in Florida and in Texas, and Pacific Northwest. We had some good shows. But there's a lot of space in between those where we're just not that many people were showing up. And so we would, the times that we would tour in Europe and actually the time we spent in Japan, even though they weren't huge shows, there was enough people to pack out these clubs that we were playing, and, they were excited. They were happy to see us. And so I think, some of those times, you know, really felt like we were doing the right thing, and we were just having a lot of fun. I guess that was probably the main thing. We're having a lot of fun doing what we wanted to do.
Were those the heyday back in the 90s, though, for Fat Records? I mean, it had to have felt great, right? I mean, just like it seemed like every band that Fat Mike signed did amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it did, and it was a way of getting to an audience that probably wouldn't have tried the band otherwise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, which is a mixed bag, right? Because, you know, if an audience is into, you know, you pick two or three other bands from the Fat Wreck lineup at that time, you know, not Bracket, let me put it that way. if they're into some of the other bands that are harder and faster, and then Bracket's on the bill, you know, they might not be into it. But on the other hand, you know, I think we were a nice contrast to a lot of the other things that were going on, not just on Fat, but just kind of in the scene at that time. Yeah. So we were different and we stood out that way, you know, which is, like I said, it could be positive and maybe not so good at times, depending on how people take it.
So just random question. How did you get your name?
We just picked that name. There's really no meaning to it at all. And this was, we were trying to get away from, you know, like I was talking before, we had been this band, we were playing a lot of local, cover band gigs, and we were just kind of a jukebox band. And then we wrote a bunch of original stuff, and we wanted to break away from that and kind of, you know, rebrand ourselves, and we needed a name, and we'd booked a show in San Francisco, and we needed a name. And so we just literally opened a dictionary and stuck our finger in it. And we said, yeah, that sounds like it could be a band. Let's do that. That's what we did.
Have you guys ever like made up stories? Cause I'm sure you get asked that all the time. Have you ever made up a good story about how you got your name?
That's a good question. It wouldn't surprise me if we've made up a story in the moment, but I can't think of one offhand. That's a good one for that. He'll make up a story for you.
Okay. Awesome.
Without even thinking about it. Yeah.
So, I was wanting to ask you about Requiem. It came out in 2006, but it came out on Takeover Records, which, Ben from Yellow Card, he's been on the show before. I know he kind of runs Takeover, and now it's become more of like a digital thing. I know back in the day, there was more physical stuff that came out on that label, but I was reading on the internet, and this could be true. You know, sometimes stuff on the internet's not true, that you were on Fat and that album was actually rejected by Fat. Like they maybe didn't think it was punk enough. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it went. So, we had started recording that, and we were, you know, as we were getting some tracks, done, you know, we put some demo stuff together for Mike, and he was kind of lukewarm on it, for whatever reasons. And he's, like I said, he's always been, a big supporter of our band, weirdly, again, because, I mean, we were kind of, you know, different than a lot of the bands that he was working with. But so we appreciate that. And, you know, honestly, he was upfront with us, and he said, you know, I just don't think this is the right fit for Fat right now. And so we, you know, we were disappointed, but we were started looking around, and we got, we ended up talking to Takeover, and we wanted, this was another situation where the record was basically done, and we wanted to put it out. And so they were, you know, they were excited to work with us. And so we did that. I mean, unfortunately they kind of Takeover kind of, I guess they're still around in some form, but they kind of really, they kind of went their own way after that. So, so we didn't get as much of a, we didn't have much of a relationship with them after that record came out, but we were just happy to get that out.
Did you guys do a lot of touring on that record?
We didn't. I mean, that came out, that came out after I moved out of California. So I live in Denver right now.
Okay.
So that came out, I moved out of town and, I mean, that was a factor. That wasn't the only factor. You know, I think Marty was kind of wanting to just kind of work through things or work on things on his own, as opposed to doing a lot of touring. So we didn't tour on that. I think there's some great songs on that album, that I think would carry really well live, but we never did tour on that.
I read that you guys kind of like, built your own studio called Trailer Park Studios. Were you guys using that to record Requiem, or like, had you already started kind of recording your own stuff, or were you still like kind of going out and finding studios?
No, we did. That was, we recorded Requiem there in that studio. So we, Marty had started collecting gear, from various places. And, you know, we decided that we wanted to do everything ourselves.
Yeah.
And cause I think the previous record we had done at Motor with Fat. And so this one we decided we just wanted to do everything ourselves. We didn't want to feel rushed. We wanted to, you know, obsess over something. If we wanted to obsess, we wanted to let something go. If we wanted to let it go, or whatever the case might be. So we just, you know, Marty did a bunch of research online, and we made plans, and he had this, his Marty's dad has some property. he owns some apple orchards up in Sonoma County. And so he had this space, and we got a hold of a single wide trailer, and we parked it in the apple orchard, which is was kind of inspiration for some of the song lyrics that we had. But and then we spent, I don't know how long, you know, 5 or 6 months building it out. And we built a legit studio in it. It wasn't just like setting up mics in the living room. We had done some things for isolation and, you know, sound quality and things like that. So yeah, we built this thing, and that's, Marty and primarily Marty and Angelo, they, I would say, sort of practiced a little bit. We had some other, there was some local bands that wanted to do some demos. So they, you know, Marty and Ange recorded them there and kind of learned what they were trying to do. And then from there we jumped into Requiem, and we did it all there.
Are you guys still utilizing that place, or does it exist anymore?
Well, the unfortunate thing is it doesn't exist.
Okay.
which is a real bummer, because we put a lot into it. But what happened is we recorded that, and then somewhere along the lines, there was someone on a neighboring property that had an issue and was threatening, you know, that we had built this thing and we didn't get the proper permits, and there was code, not that there was really, it was a trailer, right? There was not that much code violation. But so anyhow, it was turning into this whole thing, and, you know, it was on Marty's dad's property. We didn't want it to be a problem for him. And so ultimately, we pulled all the gear out of it and sold it. And that was that. So we built it, recorded one record, and then sold it. This is what happened.
So I'd like to get into a little bit more of your story. You said you're in Denver now and the other guys are still on the West Coast.
Yeah.
What brought you to Denver? You said a job?
Yeah. I mean, job was part of it. Even when we were still on Fat and and I forgot which record we were on at that point. I guess it's probably When All Else Fails. We were doing some touring, but we were already sort of slowing down on the heavy touring at that point. And Marty was, he had already started, you know, talking about wanting more control and wanting just be able to, just to kind of lock in and focus on songwriting and production and things like that, more so than going out and playing a bunch of live shows. So we're really just kind of slowing down. And at this point we're all working and we all have day jobs. I mean, I don't know how you did with the Ataris, but we never, to date, we have really not made much money doing this. So we all support ourselves with normal jobs.
Well, and I think that makes it easier if you want to concentrate on the songwriting and stuff. So many bands get like locked in this. Well, you know, I have to tour 11 months out of the year if I want to pay my bills. I can't just.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, during the Ataris and other bands I was in, normally, you know, unless I was touring 11 months out of the year, I had some sort of normal job.
Yeah. So that's kind of how all of us were. We all had these jobs. And then, as it turns out, the company that I was working for was relocating, and they made me an offer to relocate to Denver. And I was kind of ready for a change. I've been, you know, living in Sonoma County my whole life, and I was just ready for a change. And so I made the move. I didn't leave the band necessarily, although obviously that made it harder for us to do things. It changed the dynamic, but I wasn't quitting the band. I was moving, you know, I was moving changing where I lived. So, but there, that also did result in some gaps in what the things that we were doing. And, you know, the guys did some, they kind of did some other projects while I was here. And, but I'd say over the last maybe 6 or 7 years, we've kind of gotten into a cycle where we can do some songwriting at a distance. And then I fly back out there, we track drums, and you know, and then they do a lot of the guitars and vocals and production. I mean, ever since that Requiem, we've done everything ourselves, even though we lost that studio. So we still have the gear, so we'll set up and we'll track in Zach's garage, or we'll do guitars in, you know, Marty's living room or whatever works for us.
So you guys, you know, are back on Fat now. Can you take me kind of through how that came about? Because I know the new record, which we'll talk about a little bit more here in a little bit, the Too Old to Die Young, is on Fat. And
yeah,
you guys were kind of away for a while and did all these other things with other labels, and you're doing everything yourself. How did you get back to being on Fat Records?
So we were invited to play the Fat Rec 25th anniversary tour. Or show, really. There was a tour as well, but we were invited to the San Francisco show as part of the celebration of the anniversary of the label.
Yeah.
So we were asked to come play that show. It was a 2-day show that they had there in San Francisco, and.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We went out and we played. It honestly had been the first time we played live in probably a couple of years at that point. And, you know, so we practiced up and we went out and played the show. We had a great time. It was great to be a part of that, that group again. And, I think it was a good show for us. We had a good response. There was some old timers there that kind of remembered some of the stuff that we had done years ago. And, so after that, you know, we're there, we're hanging. It was almost like a festival kind of a environment. We're hanging there and we're talking to other bands, and, and got into a conversation with Mike and Aaron, and they were interested in doing something with us again. And, you know, asked us what we thought about it and kind of where we were. And at that point we were right in the middle of, recording and producing, The Last Page. And so we weren't ready to jump into something immediately, but we thought, you know, this would be great. If Fat is excited to do something with us, then, you know, we can work on some material after The Last Page. And, you know, Mike and Aaron were interested in putting that out for us. So that's kind of how we got reconnected. And then after we wrapped up The Last Page, we got into recording for this album. And yeah, it just came out a couple of months ago.
So like the writing process, not just for the new record, but for, you know, all of your records, like what is, do you guys come in with lyrics? Does someone bring in a song? Like how is it different every time? How does it work for you guys?
It's kind of been different every time. So really early on, like the our first couple of records, we would all be together in a room and, you know, there would be a guitar riff that Marty had, and then we would work through that and we would kind of build it up. Most of the time the lyrics came later. I would say generally we had, you know, at least the structure of the song together before we started putting lyrics on it, but that, you know, not always the case. And as a matter of fact, that's kind of how we would record. So that first record, we, you know, that's how we wrote the songs. That's how we practiced them. And then when we tracked them, we all stood in the same room. You know, we isolated the guitar amps and stuff. We all stood in the same room and did all the tracks. And I think we only overdubbed vocals and some leads on that first record. And of course that's changed now over time. And so like, so you were asking about the songwriting. So over time, I'd say that was probably the first two or three records were kind of like that. And then it slowly started becoming more collaborative and also, you know, a little bit more experimental with the kind of things that we were doing. And then when Angelo joined the band, he started writing songs and bringing ideas. And he was a great addition and also really just a great collaborator with Marty and then Zach as well. Cause Zach, you know, has written some songs. I've written some lyrics. they don't always get used, but so I try to contribute when I can there. So it's kind of changed. You know, we used to do it all together, and I would say, you know, literally standing in a room working out parts. Now there's it's weird because it's changed. I would say it's as collaborative as it's ever been, but it's also, you know, each of us are coming up with more sort of fully formed ideas. And then, oh, like this is, you know, Zach wrote this song and let's work through it kind of thing. Or, you know, some of the songs that Angela wrote, that kind of thing.
Are they emailing like stuff to you since you're out of town? Like you guys going back and forth, like utilizing technology?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, this last record, when early on I went out and we rented just a practice studio. We spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 days in the practice studio, just kind of working through some stuff to see how the ideas were coming together. And then after that, they recorded some scratch guitars that they sent me. And then I just worked, you know, I just worked through the drums, alongside the scratch tracks, and then went back out to track the drums. And of course, some things they had still been fiddling around with stuff. So like when I went back to track the drums, for example, Angela had a brand new song and, you know, we just kind of did a quickie rehearsal and then tracked the drums to that kind of in the moment there. So, yeah, that's kind of how we did it. Not super high tech, pretty low tech really. Just working with scratch tracks and then getting together and polishing when we're all kind of together in the same space.
Well, I'll tell you, the production on the new record sounds great, man. I mean, you guys did an excellent job.
That's great too. I mean, really that credit goes to, you know, Marty, Ange, and Zach. They're the ones that really invested the hours into the production of it. But yeah, that's good to hear. I'm glad it's coming across.
So being a band since 1992, you were talking about playing, you know, the Fat Records 25 year anniversary show. I would think just in general, trying to pick a set list would be tough, but even for that show, it'd probably even be tougher because you're probably going to play most of the stuff that you did on Fat. So like, what is the process for you guys when you're trying to pick a set list?
Well, generally the process is, you know, there's some things that we know that we're kind of always going to play. Talk Show and the Two Rack song, those are ones that were popular for us on Fat. Trailer Park's another one that was on Four Wheel Vibe. So we kind of collect up those, and then we add in, you know, kind of our favorites at the time, the ones that we think, you know, that we just want to play because they're fun or because it's something new and we think it might go over good live or whatever. So we do that and we create this set list. And then usually what happens is when we're actually on stage with the set list, Marty will start cutting songs that he doesn't want to play. So that's kind of how we go through the trouble of doing this list. And then we end up playing kind of an abbreviated thing, which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I had one more question about the new record. You said you do everything. You guys have it all like in-house. Did you guys master it as well, or did you send it off to get it mastered somewhere?
No, that was the only thing that we didn't do ourselves, was mastering and artwork. We didn't do the artwork ourselves either.
The artwork's really cool. It's like the little action figure kind of things, right?
Yeah, yeah. Those are some toys that Angelo had, and we used them to stage some photos and actually did a little video with them. Actually look kind of like a stop action video with those as well.
That's awesome, man. So I've had you on the phone for a while. This is called That One Time on Tour. Some guests try to like prepare something, but I like to put people on the spot. You've done a lot of touring with Bracket over your career. Is there a funny story or a scary story or anything you can share with my listeners that happened while you were on tour?
Let's see.
I know it's tough. It's I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So we did a couple of tours with SNFU.
Okay, awesome.
We had a lot of fun with them. Those are good tours. Again, it was kind of an interesting mix of crowd, you know, because particularly when you go all the way back to their early stuff, it's just, you know, it's pretty hard. And then there's us with some, you know, harmonies and stuff. So, But we got along really well with those guys, and we did a couple of tours, and we were playing, I'll probably screw up where we were, somewhere in Western Canada, central to Western Canada.
Okay.
And this was in the winter and it was all cold and snowy. and we were playing this, it was more of a bar than it was a club, kind of a bar club kind of a thing. I mean, there was a legit stage and all that kind of a thing, but they had the full-on football player bouncer crew there.
Okay.
And some of these guys were huge, and so it wasn't really their scene. I mean, they were working, they had a job, right? They had a job to do.
Yeah.
And so there was we had played our set, and it went fine. And then SNFU's on stage, and Chai from SNFU, he messes with everyone. And so he started sort of mocking these bouncers and doing some things and just kind of getting under their skin. And so they got pretty agitated, and long story short is that, the club bouncers had decided they were going to take it out on what they thought was SNFU, but instead what they did is they came out and they busted the windows out of our van.
Oh my God.
And yeah, so they broke the back windows out of our, it was a rental van. And so it's freezing cold and our windows are busted out, and we have all our gear in the back. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, we're putting tape and newspaper and whatever we can find to get the windows closed up. And then we have, you know, get the van fixed and all that jazz.
And there's no short drives in Canada.
No, there isn't. No.
I just always remember looking on the itinerary and it's like, it's February. Why the hell are we going to Canada?
Yeah. Yeah. We had some good tours up there. Good shows. We toured the SNFU up there We toured with MXPX, which was a pretty good fit for us because they're, you know, they're not as hard as some of the other bands that we would have toured with. So, we had good shows all across Canada.
I just had Tom from MXPX on the show a couple weeks back, and every time Mike mentions you guys all the time, like I could tell you guys were friends.
Oh yeah, great. Yeah, we had I listened to that episode. We had fun with those guys. Tom and Yuri and Mike, I mean, it was a good, and their whole crew. It was a good bunch to be traveling with. I had a lot of fun with them.
So, you know, you guys have this record that just came out not too long ago, Too Old to Die Young on Fat Records. I love it. It's great. I'm a metal kind of punk guy. Like I love Propagandhi and all that stuff. But when I heard you guys on Fat, I felt like it was a breath of fresh air, like you said, because I love pop music. I love, you know, different things. And you guys being in that heyday of the 90s with Strung Out and Propagandhi and Good Riddance, I think it was almost better for you guys because you kind of stood out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there were times when it was good for us to be different, that's for sure. Which, I mean, honestly, that's what we're going to do anyhow. I mean, we're not only are we not necessarily capable of playing as fast as some of those other bands, it's not us. It wouldn't be it wouldn't be our personality to do that. So, I mean, we do what we like, and it's that's kind of our contribution, I guess. But and it's, you know, it's genuine. This is the music that we write. So there are times when that's good because it gets, you know, there's. If we're in front of an audience that can appreciate that, then it's good. We have been in front of audiences that all they want to do is pit it up, and we're not really the band for them. So we felt that too. I mean, we've got some faster songs, and you know, people will get into it, with those songs and stuff, but it just depends, you know, it's a matter of reading the crowd, I guess, and trying to do your thing.
So what you're saying is you're not going to be going on tour anytime soon with like Hatebreed or anybody.
Probably not. Not unless they want to, not unless they're going to do an acoustic set, then we'll consider it.
Awesome. So what does the future look like for the band? You know, like I said, the new record's out. Are you guys doing any touring? I know you guys are split up across the country. So what's up with the band?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about doing some things, doing some live shows, maybe some short tour dates, that kind of a thing. I think it would be fun for us to do, and it's exciting. Especially being back on Fat, it would be a good time for us to do something like that. We don't have any 6 month tours planned or anything like that, but we are talking about, you know, the record's out and, you know, what could we do? And we get, you know, we've had, some invites for some different festivals and things like that. So we're just trying to figure out what's the right thing for us to do. obviously we need to dust off, the cobwebs a little bit, and particularly for some of the more recent stuff that we've just never really played live at all. We need to get together and do that. And that's part of it as well. I mean, we want to make sure, the ideas that we have and the stuff that we've recorded, we can actually carry live. And so that would be, we kind of have this bar for ourselves, that we'd want to make sure we could do that, you know, with all the vocals and the things like that, that we've got in place. So that's part of it too. You know, we don't want to go premature and feel like we could have done a better job. So.
Do you think there's going to be another 3-year gap before the next record, or do you guys think maybe it'll come a little sooner?
I don't know. I think it just kind of depends on where the inspiration is. I mean, we have nothing at stake at this point, right?
So, totally.
I mean, we could literally do whatever we want, which is kind of what we've been doing for the last number of years anyhow. It's good to be appreciated, and I think it would be great if we, you know, if we got some, you know, if we played some shows and we got some good response and that inspired us to get on it and do some more songwriting, recording, then, we would probably do that. So it really just kind of depends, on, you know, where everyone's at who needs a break and who's, you know, who's anxious to go do more. But honestly, we have a lot of fun doing this. And, so if it's fun, we'll do it. And if it feels like it's too much, then we'll take a break.
Cool. Well, what are the socials and maybe places they can check you out? I'm sure the album, it's on iTunes and Spotify and everything, but do you guys have a website or are you guys, I know you have an Instagram. I think it's @_the_band. It's @_the_band.
That's right. yeah. That's the Instagram. And then, Facebook is just @BracketBand and Twitter is @_band. And you know, people could just go search us out too. The only,
you guys have a band camp as well. I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we do have a band camp. See if I can have it here.
I think it's probably bracket.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Or they can just search on Bandcamp. They'll find it.
There is a, weirdly, there is another band called Bracket out there.
Really?
And yeah, if you just search Bracket on iTunes or something like that, you might get us, and you might also get a, Nigerian Afropop duo called Bracket. So,
awesome,
yeah. And they, it's really kind of funny because we've been around for, you know, years now. And I, you know, these guys popped up, I don't know, not too long ago. And there was a one point where, one of their fans, you know, was messaging us and claiming that we stole their name and all this stuff. And we're like, you know, do a Google search before you name your band. All right. And yeah. See what else pops up. So yeah, that's just if people are just searching, if you see four old dudes, that's probably us. If you see two Nigerian dudes, that's not us. That's somebody else.
So the title of the new record is Too Old to Die Young. Is that kind of a nod to, you know, the aging punk rockers like I am?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously or really, we don't take very much too seriously. So, you know, we're all, like I said, we're all pushing 50, except for Ange. He's the young one in the band. But, you know, this is still something we like to do. And, you know, if anybody appreciates it, that's great. That feels good. And, we'll keep doing it, you know, if we can. So we're going to press on. As long as we're inspired and having fun, we'll keep doing it.
Well, that's awesome, man. I just want to, you know, tell everybody out there to check out Too Old to Die Young and also all the other releases by Bracket. Ray, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, and I would love to have you back in the future when you guys have something else coming out.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thanks, Chris.
No problem, man. I will talk to you soon. Have an excellent evening, okay?
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye. So there it was, my conversation with Ray Castro from the awesome band Bracket. You guys need to go check out their new album on Fat Records called Too Old to Die Young. You will not be sorry. So check that out, and I can't wait to have Ray back on the program in the future. So I'm going to try something a little bit different on this outro. I want to do a segment called Scene Report. I want you guys to email me, hit me up, let me know about shows and different things in the music scene that's happening where you live, and I'll talk about it on the show. So I live in Muncie, Indiana. Back when I was younger, I was pretty plugged into the music scene. I am not that plugged into the music scene currently, but there is a really cool show coming up. We have this place in Muncie called the Water Bowl, and it's this big man-made kind of lake, and you can camp out there and go swimming, and they do all kinds of cool stuff out there, but they are having this thing called the Rise of the Loser Fest. It is the 6th annual Rise of the Loser Fest. And it's basically 2 days, 3 stages at the Water Bowl here in Muncie, Indiana. It's August 23rd and August 24th. Music, camping, and swimming. And there's so many great bands. But some of the highlights, Red, big kind of, I don't know, radio metal band. I don't know if that's offensive or not to say. A band called Saul. Losing September, a fairly large band from this area, and Winter's Descent, just so many bands. I think most of the bands are pretty heavy, so if you're into metal, I'm sure you would enjoy it. But if you want more information, you can just search Rise of the Loser Fest on Facebook, or you can go to riseoftheloser.bpt.me. That's Brown Paper Tickets website. You can get tickets and all the info. So just head on over to riseoftheloser.bpt.me for more information. So if you guys are local here in East Central Indiana, check it out. Rise of the Loser Fest, the 6th annual Rise of the Loser Fest, August 23rd and 24th at the Water Bowl here in Muncie, Indiana. You can camp and swim and check out some great music. So if you guys want me to talk about the scene where you live, hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com, and I will give the scene report from your neck of the woods. So that's it. Thank you guys so much for checking out this episode. Coming back week in and week out, we have charted for the last 27 weeks in a row. And that is because of you guys and how much you support the show. It means the world to me because sometimes, you know, I love doing this show and I would do it for no one to listen. I would just do it because I enjoy doing it. But knowing that you guys are out there makes it that much more worth it. And thank you. Just thank you so much for supporting the show. That's it. I'm going to jump out of here. Before I do, you know how we do on this show, man. I always play some music. So I'm going to play one of my favorite songs from Brackett's new record, Too Old to Die Young. This song is entitled Cloud 8. I don't know what that means, but it's called Cloud 8, and it's really cool, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Oh, and by the way, next week, Ray Carlisle, Teenage Bottle Rocket, on the program. It's going to be awesome. So here it is, Brackett with Cloud 8. I will see you guys next week. Chris out.
Show in 10 years, Friday, August 30th at the Hi-Fi in Indianapolis with the bands Pillars and Rooms. We're celebrating the 15-year anniversary of the release of A Hostage in the Meaning of Life, our debut album on Fearless Records. So come out Friday, August 30th at the Hi-Fi in Indianapolis. It's going to be an amazing time. Go to HiFiIndy.com for more information.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to the show on the road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.